Education Committee will come to order. It is 8:07, March 30, 2011. Secretary, please call roll.
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative
Seaton.
Here. Representative Feige.
Here.
Representative Pruitt.
Here.
Representative
Sisna. Representative Kawasaki. Here.
Representative, Chair Dick.
Here. Okay, and we'll spare ourselves the embarrassment, and we will turn off our cell phones. John Lamont, are you online, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Waka. John, go ahead with you. Sheila has us up here on Google Earth. We're zooming in on you right now. And there we go. Mountain Village, we got it. John, go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning, Honorable Speaker, representatives of the House Education Committee, Chairman Dick, Vice Chair Pruitt, Members Wilson, Seaton, Figge, Sisna, and Kawasaki. My name is John Lamont. I'm the superintendent of the Lower Yukon School District. I've been here, I'm just ending my sixth year with the Lower Yukon. Born and raised out here, Yukon Delta, actually close to the village of Imama. So the first four slides have covered this basic. I want to get to the overview. As you all are aware, in 76, the state took over and formed all of the REAAs, the Rural Education Attendance Areas. Lower Yukon was number three. We have 11 villages spread out over just about 22,000 square miles. Our furthest north village is Coplet. Our furthest south village is Hooper Bay. And our furthest east village is Rushmissen. We cover two state districts. We have 10 K-12 schools and one K-8 school. Our basic overall enrollment is just about 2,000 students. As I said, our district is predominantly about 99% Yupik Eskimo, which I am. We're located in the Wayne Hampton Recording District, and well known for our highest numbers of young people in the state, up to about 26 years of age. The next slide. Where we've been. There's a picture on the left of Russian, the old Russian school, K-12 school, 2002-2003, and on the right, the picture of the most recent Russian school we opened. And the purpose, the board, rather than having a mission and vision statement, the board and the communities came up with a purpose statement for the district. And the purpose is stated right at the bottom, the purpose of our communities ensure tradition, culture, and quality education for all our children. Slide 5. Some of the challenges. The academic growth, as you all are aware, we're one of the school districts that are in intervention. We've been one of the lowest performing school districts since the state formed the REAAs. And as you can see, we've been challenging our students to achieve at a higher, faster rate than an average Alaskan student. Our district started behind the curve, behind almost every other district in the state after the NCLD Act of 2002 was put into law. But, if you go to the next slide, we've been making academic gains faster than the state average. As you can see on the next slide, the state of Alaska, even though they're, between, 60% and 80%, they've had a 5% increase in language arts growth and a 5% increase in mathematics growth. These are taken from state data between the years 2002 and last academic year. And the Lower Yukon School District, as you can see, even though we're between 20% and 40%, and we're closing that gap. Between 2002 and 2009, and last academic year, we've had just about almost 14.5% increase in language arts and about 13% increase in mathematics. But we've been making our growth faster. We are closing that gap with what we're doing. Another one of our challenges, if you switch to the next slide, for a bunch of young ladies at one of our schools at the School of Alumna. Those were the junior high girls that went down to juvenile last year. Attendance being another one of our challenges, we've been having community meetings with parents, residents, every quarter to address this challenge, and it's a challenge throughout the state and throughout the nation, I believe. It is with parent support we can achieve higher attendance rates and having more academic rigor and challenging highly qualified teachers who have really good people skills and who just love children. The next slide, dropout rate. Our district, like many others, are finding ways to address this challenge. Over the years, we've hired a attendance specialist, and we no longer have that. We're utilizing our locals in each community. We're hiring a part-time person to work with the homeschool coordinators and the counselors at each of our sites to help our children work with them in keeping their interest in school, whether it's mathematics or whether it's activities, care to keep them interested. Some of our challenges, you know, back when the state first formed took over the districts or the schools in rural Alaska, vocational education was very high on the ladder. Career tech education to job shadowing is another way to keep our children in school. And from hiring and caring highly qualified teachers to inviting community members to meet with our children and staff regularly. The next slide, you can slide through that academic growth. You've seen that in our challenges and also in our advances. Slide 11, teacher retention. At one point, we had close to 50% of our teachers turn over in a year. Now we're down to about roughly close to 25%. We have 160 teachers in our district, and this year I think we're looking at close to 40 teachers either retiring, resigning, moving to different districts, or leaving education altogether. The next slide. Successes. I believe, you know, with our teacher attrition, you know, keeping teachers, getting funding from the state for our new schools, teachers having top quality, not only technology, but good, excellent curriculum in the classrooms, and a lot of professional development. Teacher housing through grants that we've received from AHFC to build better teacher housing in some of our villages. Next slide. Academic growth in language arts and math. As you've seen on the slide earlier, our gains are almost twice that of the state. And some of the projects we're working on, after school tutoring, intervention, some intervention projects to help our lowest performing students. What we do is, as you can read on the OYSD intervention program, special intervention efforts are currently implemented at six of our schools. Those are six of our lowest performing schools to help students, those lowest performing students, to help them close that gap and gain a better understanding of their core content. If, like I said earlier, we have all our curriculum content areas standardized, and we've developed standards with a group of teachers and community members and on our curriculum committees over the years to make sure that we hit every standard that is needed in each of the content areas. Next slide, decreased teacher attrition rates. I had discussed that earlier. We're keeping our teachers with better housing, better professional development opportunities, and hiring the right people in the beginning. The next slide is new schools. I want to thank the state of Alaska. I want to thank all the legislators, whether you're new or old, the people that voted. As you can see, in 2002, Kotlik, our northernmost school, was built and opened in 2002, and so was Pilot Station, In River Yukon School. In 2005, we opened Scammon Bay School on the Bering Sea coast. 2006, we opened the Hooper Bay School on the Bering Sea coast. In 2008, we opened the Nunamequa, or Sheldon Twin School in Nunamequa, Alaska, on the south of the Yukon River. 2010, we opened the Marshall School, and also last fall, we opened the Russian Mission School. Both of these village schools are in Senator Kukas' district and Representative Dick's district. 2010, we did a renovation. We're almost complete with the renovation project here at Mountain Village, at the Mountain Village K-12 school. I want to thank you and all your constituents out here on the Delta. I want to thank you all for all the work you've done in making sure this was a possibility in building our new schools. Educational change, as you all are aware, it's like short-term goals, 1 to 3 years, and it's been very difficult talking with the families and the parents out there wanting to see change the next year after we implemented something. I told them, you know, I'll be here in the district since I was born and raised here. I'll be here until I see change or the board terminates me as superintendent of the district. But change takes, you know, a few years, quite a few years, and I'd like to see this, our standards-based model in process. Every year it gets better. I'd like to see it through for 13 years to see what the end product would be after actually going through a system like this. The next slide is just some pictures of our children in the district at different schools. And then, Boyanor, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you all have a successful ending to the legislative session this year. And are there any questions for me, Mr. Chairman and honorable members of the House Education Committee?
John, Goyanokfas. Any question from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations on your big jumps that you've made, and good luck on what you're going to be doing in the future. Would you say the biggest change has come inside the school or outside the school?
Actually, the biggest change has come equally with new schools and with hiring the right people, highly qualified teachers who really enjoy kids and make learning fun in the classroom. I think that is a key. I think I have an excellent human resource director, and I have quite an excellent team that have really good people skills that when we go out and interview teachers, we make sure that they're not coming to rural Alaska for the fishing and hunting, but they're coming for the love of our children. So I think it's almost equally both, you know, with good schools, new schools coming online, kids really, you know, taking care of them and the adults taking care of them. Thank you, Honorable Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
Any other question from committee? Okay, John, one thought I had, we've recently been exposed to a lot of presentations, and I know our children have a pretty good competitive spirit, and you might want to communicate to them the one thing that's come to our attention is that they're not just going to be competing in Alaska, but they're going to be competing on a world market, and we certainly don't want any adverse competition, but you need to tell those kids they're going to be competing with China and India. You know, they're going to be competing on a world market by the time they get up and running. So, you might want to, we've had our horizon broadened in that regard, and you might want to tell the kids that too, that, the fact that stunned me was that there's more honors students in India than there are students in all of the United States. And we certainly don't want to be contentious there, but we folks out in the bush, we do have a competitive spirit. So I thought you might want to pass that on. Any other question from committee? Go ahead, John.
Well, I was going to say thank you, Honorable Representative Dick. We certainly will. We have good technology, complements of E-rate and the federal government. And our children, whether they're working on local standards, they're also knowing and will continue to promote that they're not, you know, the world market, the world competition with everyone else out there. And I will make sure that is shared with all our students in our district. Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Sharon Cisna. I was told that you're online. Go ahead, Sharon.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I was having problems with my mute button. But I was wanting to ask the superintendent if the community is working on growing their own in terms of getting instructors to slowly be developed from their region, the Wade-Hampton region, because that is one way to kind of have teachers spend more time.
John, you want to respond to that?
Honorable Chairman, Representative Cisna, thank you very much for the question. What we're doing, we have a very active Teacher Educators of Alaska program. We're really trying our best to get, and we've, at one point, we've had about 20% of our teachers local, but some of them have retired over the years, and we're trying to, I know one of our sites, we have half of our teachers that are born and raised in the village, like myself, but not here in Mountain Village, it's another one of our remote villages. That's what we'd love to see. We'd love to see higher. Almost 100% of our teachers, which I doubt we'll see in the next 30 years, you know, all over.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. If there's no other questions from committee, again, John, and say hello to the folks down there for me, and we will move on. The purpose of meeting today is we're going to hopefully deal with four bills. And one is HB 15, traumatic brain injury. It's the second hearing sponsored by Representative Dugan. We will take public testimony and intend to move if the committee wishes. We'll do HB 5, constitutional history curriculum, is the sixth hearing. I have a hard time to believe that. And sponsored by Rep. Keller, we will take public testimony, intent to move if the committee wishes. HB 199, state boarding schools, second hearing, sponsored by Health Education Committee, we will take public testimony, intent to move if the committee wishes. HB 198, CESA, Special Education Service Agency, second hearing, sponsored by the House Education Committee. We will take public testimony, and the intent is to move if we get there. So, I guess, is Representative Dugan, the staff here, would come forward and briefly recap the bill. And identify yourself for the record, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Frank Amaduri. I'm staff to Representative Dugan. And yes, I'll just go over a quick recap of the bill. We also have, I believe, online Gary Matthews from ASAA who can speak to some of the administration questions if we have them, and I believe also Jill Hodges from who testified last time about the technical aspects of brain injuries, so, and she's available as well to continue to do that. Just to recap, as long as kids are playing sports, jumping on beds, or climbing trees, they're probably going to get concussions. There's not very much we can do about that. And while no concussion is a good thing, what this bill seeks to do is reduce and, with any luck, prevent a second concussion from occurring on top of the first, which can be much more traumatic and cause permanent injuries. This bill is modeled after the LISTAT bill in Washington State, which has been very successful and is kind of the model legislation around the country right now. It has strong support, as you heard last time, from the National Football League, who are also working very hard on this same issue. And basically, the bill does three things. It requires parents, coaches, and students to be educated about concussions, the causes, and proper responses to them. And then it requires that a student athlete suspected of receiving a concussion be removed from player practice. And thirdly, it requires that the student not be returned to practice until cleared by a qualified medical professional. And the idea being, again, to prevent a second concussion. One of the problems that we have is that, as I said, you can't really prevent that first concussion. And even in the National Football League, where you've got, you know, the best equipment money can buy, it's going to happen. And as long as kids are doing this, it's going to happen. The danger comes, becomes much more compounded when you, even if you don't receive a second head injury, but if you just continue to stress the body and the brain while you have that first injury, you can cause further damage. So that's really the intent. ASAA, who will be administering this through the school districts or in conjunction with the school districts, has testified, as you heard last time, that they actually intend to go ahead with this kind of practice, whether they get the legislation or not. It's that important to them. The good news about one of the important things I would think about the legislation is that in other places where they've passed these kinds of bills, you tend to see that the behavior spreads even to organizations that aren't necessarily covered by the bill, things like club sports, community sports groups, and that's definitely happened in Washington. So even at the youth levels where this doesn't reach, we've also, in all of the school superintendents and school district officials that we've talked to, one of the other challenges that we ran into was ASAA actually only works with high schools. And so technically they'd be working with the districts to apply these rules to high schools. However, every superintendent and school official that we talked to said that they would have every intent of also extending this to the middle school level, at least. I also talked to the Association of School Nurses last week, who said that they're going to lobby the school districts once the law is passed to actually do this even outside of sports, for playground injuries and things like that, to have a similar kind of requirements for students who are suspected of receiving concussions so that the school nurses can participate and protect those kids as well. So, I mean, that's the kind of behavior that you tend to see once the bill is passed. It tends to spread pretty quickly to other organizations. One of the challenges that we did face, and we addressed some of those issues last time, is that while there are other states, rural states, that have passed legislation like this, there is no other more rural state than Alaska. And in fact, as everyone knows, our rural communities are not only rural, but in many cases remote. And so access to things like a qualified medical or licensed medical professional is quite a bit more difficult in some of those cases. And we attempted to address that as best we could by adding things like, I think you'll, it's on page 3 at the top of the page on your work draft. It initially said by a licensed healthcare professional, period. But when we began to talk to people, we realized that that was going to be difficult to do in a timely manner in some of our communities. And so we also expanded that to people who work under the direction of a licensed healthcare professional, which covered the village nurses and some other people, including the certified athletic trainers who testified here last week as well. And there are about 80 of those in the state. Most of them are on the road system, but some are in rural Alaska, and we hope to see more of them out there. There was a question last week on that about whether the community health aides would be included in this. And I talked to them. In fact, they would be if they work under the direction of a physician. And our feeling on that is that we hope that they would, and we hope that they would participate and work under the direction of a physician. Our feeling was, in the end, we wanted to err on the side of health. And so while it may be a little bit more difficult in rural Alaska, we wanted to offer as much access as possible, but no less protection. And that was really that was how we tried to make all of the decisions about this, to make sure that we weren't going to accidentally return someone to play who shouldn't be on the field. But we believe we've covered all of those bases pretty well. And in terms of the other questions, Representative Feige pointed out something in the liability language, and that was, a carryover, actually, from that Washington bill, I believe, and he was very right in pointing out that some of the language could have limited the protections, the liability protections, to districts or contractors only when the event was happening on school property. And that's not our intent, because a lot of sports, as you know, in Alaska are played out in public property in other places. And so I believe there will be an amendment to correct that problem with the bill. And other than that, I think I've responded to staff with any of the other questions. Oh, the other one, there was a question about prevention. Yeah, and as I mentioned, I mean, there's really no way to prevent an initial concussion. But what you hope to do is prevent lifelong serious brain injury by preventing the stacking of concussions one on top of the other. And that's basically my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions. And as I said, we do have Jill Hodges and Gary Matthews online, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page, you mentioned that the health care or the health aides in villages could get the training and then make these decisions as long as they were under the provision of a physician. Now, in on page 2, line 26, and I'm actually glad to see this, but by a licensed health care provider, that could be a PA, it could be an RN, so it's not necessarily a doctor, a licensed health care provider. And I, when we lived in Tope, I do know that the nurses' aides were supervised by a PA. So I'm glad to see that that does cover that. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a doctor per se.
Representative Wilson to the chair. That's correct.
What version were you reading from?
You know what? I'm reading from A version. Let me look.
Okay, we're on him.
Yes,
we're on him.
Yeah. Okay. What would that be?
Just reference us again. We're on version M.
Oh, in M, yeah. And that does say...
It'd be page 2, line...
29. Cleared for participation in writing by a qualified person. And a qualified person means either... a licensed health care provider or a person who is acting at the direction under the supervision of a licensed physician. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's correct. Okay. Any other questions from committee?
No.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Amendment 1. This would be on the upper right hand corner, M.1. On page 3, line 12 of the CS, delete on school property.
I'll object for discussion.
Uh-huh. Good. Any discussion?
I have a question about it.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we deleted the on school property, and I think there was testimony that a lot of the activities don't occur on school property, does that also limit or add immunity if students were going to or from an event? Or I don't know who to ask.
Representative Wilson.
It says in here the action or inaction occurred. If we delete that, it will say the action or inaction occurred during the delivery of services by the district or organization. So that wouldn't necessarily mean going to and from school, but it could mean if the kids were in track and they were running around the community as track activity, that would be covered.
Okay. Any other comments?
I think what it recognizes by deleting that, it recognizes that especially in places in rural Alaska, you don't necessarily utilize exclusively school-owned facilities. You have other public facilities within the community or other areas within the community that are not on school property that are still used for the you know, for athletic activity. So.
Okay. Any other comment?
Okay. I'll withdraw my.
Okay. Any other objection? If there's no other objection, the amendment passes. So moving on, we have public testimony. Jill Hodges is online to answer questions. Gary Matthews, are you there with the Alaska School of Activity Association?
Yes, I am, sir.
You want anything there, sir?
Yes, Representative Dick and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this morning. I'm Gary Matthews, Executive Director of Alaska School Activities Association, also known as ASWA. My previous comments were that we strongly support the committee substitute. I represent over 200 member high schools in Alaska. We're ready to, ASWA is ready to begin working with the schools to implement the concept. We want to protect students. We want to train coaches and administrators and families. We want to make sure that a procedure is put in place where if a student is injured, that we have a logical process for the student to be able to return to play, that ensuring that the student is not going to be subject to further risk of injury. We've worked closely with the Alaska Association of School Boards, the Alaska Association of School Administrators, and Representative Dugan's staff to make this statute and the concept a workable thing for Alaska. A comment that we can't really do much to prevent concussions. I would like to say that we try to do that. Alaska School Activities Association works closely with our national affiliate, the National Federation of High Schools, or NFHS, to develop rules and tactics to limit and reduce the potential of head injuries in contact sports. This includes proper safety equipment and training of coaches. For example, in football, the proper tackling techniques to reduce the potential for head injury. There is a point that we would like to make concerning the second section, 1431.42, about qualified person. To the best of my knowledge, I'll make 3 points. The state has no registry which lists healthcare providers who have received training and are currently certified in the evaluation and management of concussions. Number two, the healthcare provider is the only person who knows if he or she is, quote unquote, a qualified person under this statute. And three, we're encouraging the legislature to take the last step to protect the students, the school district, and ASWA by placing the burden of proof on the healthcare provider. I'm suggesting a slight wording amendment to page 2, line 30, which is the student being removed from participation in a practice or game for suspicion of concussion may not return to play until the student has been evaluated and cleared for participation in writing by a qualified person who has received training and is currently certified in the evaluation and management of concussions. I'd like to have added, comma, as verified in writing by the qualified person. Because right now, there's no way that a coach or a school administrator would know whether that person really is qualified. And the only way that we have to protect the student, the school district, and Alaska School Activities Association from risk of liability of using an unqualified person is to have that person self-certify that he or she is qualified. Those people are covered under their own malpractice insurance, their own liability insurance. So we think this one small addition to this would make this bill extremely workable, and we see no problem with moving ahead with implementation, as I said before. Regardless of whether it becomes law this year or not, we intend to move forward with this.
Thank you. Maybe I'd ask the sponsor of the bill first. Do you want to comment on that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think that would probably be fine, except what I would say on that is that if ASWA is going to move ahead, whether we make this law or not, I'm assuming, and this is what we assumed in the beginning, that those kinds of stipulations would be covered in the bylaws that guide this. And in all honesty, what we were trying to do was not be too onerous with the legislation and spell out every possible requirement in the thing. And one of the reasons for that is it's probably going to be different district by district. And so ASWA is going to work with each district. And the way that we understand this works in the other states is the athletic association will develop the paperwork that, and it does say that the student has to be evaluated and cleared in writing by a qualified person. Normally, in the other places, my understanding is that that clearance form would actually say, I am a qualified I am qualified to assess concussions, and I'm clearing this person for play. So I think that while we could do it, I think it's just as easy to handle those kinds of details in the bylaws and let the districts and the ASAA handle the details of administration rather than try and guess what every possible hurdle will be.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's probably okay, but I would like to put it on the record that we make sure that they follow through and make sure that the people are trained in each school so that there is someone there that can you know, it says by a qualified person. So then that means that the athletic organization is going to be responsible to make sure there's a qualified system in every school. And that's a big that's a big task. And so they have come to my office and have said that this is something that they is so important that this is something they want to do. So the qualified person. We just need to make sure that we have them in every school and more than one, because if someone was out sick or something like that, hopefully that there would be several people in each school that are qualified. So anyway, I just wanted to put that on the record that was our intentions.
Okay, but I think the question is, do we want to add this as a conceptual amendment? It's really the degree of specificity that we're going to get to here. Are we going to put this in statute, or are we just going to allow them to deal with it down the line? Any comment from committee? Representative Feige.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's probably best if we don't get too onerous with the legislation. Okay. I think we've given adequate direction. Mm-hmm. Anything beyond that is going to be micromanaging.
Okay. Okay, I don't see anybody else online. Is anybody else in the room would like to testify on this? Okay, I think we will. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At our previous meeting, I brought up the issue of those healthcare professionals who are exempt from licensing in the state of Alaska, especially those with Indian Health Service. They're fully qualified physicians, but they don't require licensing in the state. And I know we talked about that. We were contacted by the sponsor about that, and we were thinking that was going to show up in a CS. We don't have a CS that has that before us. I'm not sure. I don't have a note that we actually made an amendment and adopted that at the last meeting. As an amendment, and I don't think we did adopt any amendments at the last meeting, but if I'm wrong, I would be happy to not offer to give.
I had that same question. Do you want to comment, sir?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, my recollection is that there was a conceptual amendment offered and passed. So that my understanding is that I had the same understanding you did, that it was going to be in a CS, and that the language was, as you said, that or someone who was exempt from licensing.
Okay. Brief at ease.
I don't think we did.
Education Committee back to order. Representative Seaton, would you then want to offer the this conceptual amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd offer a conceptual amendment on page 3, after line 1, a new 2 that would say a healthcare professional who is exempt from occupational licensing by the state.
Any objection?
I object to the discussion.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Okay, I guess maybe is this only the ones that come across? Can you just explain which ones you're talking about?
Sure. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Yes, we have a number of healthcare professional doctors that come up here with the Indian Health Service and others, and they do not require occupational licensing by the state. So those folks that are healthcare professionals that have their other licensing from the appropriate organization. Currently, our language says a licensed healthcare provider means it's someone that's licensed in the state. So we could have in rural Alaska physicians that are, you know, nationally employed by the Indian Health Service could not perform this service. And so that is the intent, to make sure that we cover those folks as well.
Okay. I remove my objection.
Okay. Any other objection? Hearing no other objection, conceptual amendment number 2 does pass. And, okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB 15, which is / version M, from committee with as amended with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Can we have this discussion? I'll object.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, you know, the bill that we're going to pass here, I think it's a fine bill, and I approve of the sponsor and the message that we're putting forward. A lot of the liability issue and the immunity are things that I just don't know a lot about. And I noticed that this doesn't have a judicial referral. And I know it's the second committee's health and social services. I think this committee has delved into the health reasons why we need to pass this bill already. And I'm just going to urge that the sponsor consider it going to judiciary next, so that they could talk about the immunity clause as opposed to going to HESS.
Okay.
So, and I'll withdraw my objection.
Okay. Hearing no further objection, HB 15 is amended, moves from committee with an individual recommendation and accompanying fiscal note. And we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paper. Back to order. Sheila just pointed out to me we could have here a recommendation and new referral to judiciary. We don't want to slow the bill down, but could we concur on that?
Would it? Yeah. Can we remove the Hess one?
Bill,
that's up to
them. Could we concur on that, that we'd refer to judiciary?
Well, I think we have to. That has to go through the speaker.
It's just a recommendation.
It's a recommendation.
Oh, yeah. We can put the recommendation on.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we are back on the record, and we'll House Bill 5, Constitutional History Curriculum. Hard to believe this is the seventh hearing? Like a Chinese ping pong tournament here. Representative Keller, would you please recap the bill first, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because you've heard it, you're very familiar with the bill. I just will, just by inference, I passed out the closing remarks of Chief Justice Carpinetti of his State of the Judiciary address, and I almost started cheering before he was done as he was talking, and because his thoughts paralleled mine so well. I found out afterwards, I have it on good authority, that he had no idea that HB 5 existed, or he was not he was just totally unaware. I considered asking him to come in today to testify, but I didn't think that'd be appropriate, and I can't handle rejections, so I didn't, I didn't go there. But there's no better way to learn about the principles of democracy that Chief Carpinetti talks about that are so important than to go back and look at the stories and the history in that 15-year period from the signing of the Declaration of Independence to the signing of the U.S. Constitution. It's a delightful, interesting part of our history, and this bill would just mandate that there be some curriculum on that in secondary for our K-12. So with that, I would just ask you to move the bill. Thank you.
Any questions from committee? I see no public testimony. Is anybody in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Public testimony is closed. What's the will of the committee?
Move it. Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB number 5 with actually no amendments from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we have a bill that has been talking about a number of different things, talking about trying to teach values by the study of 15 years course in history, but it's a course on not on that. It's talking about civics, but it's not a course on civics. It's, I'm not sure what it is, but I know it does put another curriculum segment, and it puts another test on our school systems, and it's a you know, requirement that every student has to pass some kind of test, additional test, before they can get a diploma, and the school district can't grant a waiver under any conditions to this. So maybe we're going to make a funny little test for those that are special education students that aren't going to be able to pass a rigorous test, and I am not in favor of making a graduated kind of test, or some tests that are difficult and some tests that are easy, or some tests that are almost non-existent, and then saying that we've met a criteria that we've put on the district. I think it's going to be a very difficult decision for every school board in the state to go through and define these different levels of tests for a new graduation requirement. And so, therefore, I don't think we have a bill that is concise enough at what it is actually going to do to have a curriculum requirement in addition to the U.S. history and civics courses that are currently taught as far as a separate test to graduate. So I'm going to oppose it.
Any other comments? Representative Wilson?
I would like to submit a conceptual amendment.
And Representative Wilson.
That would be on page two. Wait a minute now. If you would withdraw, did someone make a motion?
I made a motion. So if he withdraws his objection, I'll withdraw my motion, and yeah. You can.
I'll withdraw the objection.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay, thank you. I move conceptual amendment number one on page two, line 19, and that would say for a one-segment course and final exam in the history of American Constitution.
What version are we in?
We're in D, the CS.
Yeah.
Huh?
On what?
I thought we were in E.
E,
yeah,
sorry.
This is D.
Yeah.
E.
E.
Oh, E. E? No, let me look and see if I can find E.
I think I have D as well.
Do you have D?
Yeah, going to D.
Okay. Okay. Oh, and that one does have, it has been changed to segment. I haven't seen the second, this one. Okay. It does have a curriculum segment.
Yes.
It already has that in it.
Yep.
Have we gone over this one in committee? We have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is the seventh time around.
What?
This is our seventh time around on this one.
No wonder.
But she's asking, is this our, have we seen E? And
oh.
Yeah. We have. Okay. Well, it does have what I was going to change it to. It already is there, so I withdraw my amendment.
Okay.
I don't.
You might have just asked one question. I just want to clarify with Representative Seaton. Is concern over testing? Is it is there multiple concerns that you have, or is there one specific thing that you're worried about with the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And my concern is that we have a fairly amorphous curriculum requirement that we're adding on, and then we're adding on that, yes, there's a test that has to be developed at some kind of criteria, unknown where that is, and no student can graduate high school without the passage of that test. So that is a huge burden on every school district to develop a curriculum and maybe multiple curriculums, because it's a segment, and maybe they're going to be developing these segments for different students, and they have to pass a test before they can graduate high school. We've had a huge impact with the high school qualifying exam. We came in with a very rigorous exam, and then we dumbed it down. And now it's almost a high school entrance exam. It's ninth grade math and English. And there's a real problem with that. And we see all kinds of ramifications. Now, here we have the same thing, and we're not even setting up a statewide standard. We're setting that thing that every district is going to have to go through this process. And some districts are going to say, this is the most important thing in there, and going to have a very rigorous thing on the values of the when they developed the Articles of Confederation, what were the values of the population? Because that's what the sponsor is trying to do, get to the values of the founding fathers when they developed these, not the study of these documents particularly, but the values behind the individuals that were adopting the Articles of Confederation or the Declaration or the labeled things. And I don't think that it's going to be the most productive for every school board in the state of Alaska to have to go through this development of this curriculum, whether they're going to get a rigorous test or, as the sponsor said, they can just make it so you have to sign your name to the top of the paper and you pass the test. I think that that is a terrible thing for us to send a message to school districts that you can phony this up, you can make whatever. We're not requiring it to be rigorous, we're not requiring it, we're just saying here's what we want, kind of want you to do, but we're not telling them really what we want them to do. I mean, it's been testified that this is not a civics course. I mean, civics is already offered. This is a values of these 15 years and people that had in those 15 years of history. And so, to me, that is a big problem when we're making it a criteria that you have to pass. Every single student has to pass before they graduate. They can get a diploma. They can get a GED, but they can't get a diploma. And it seems to me that that's a very intrusive requirement for something that is as nonspecific as we have.
Representative Pruitt.
Would Representative Seaton, and well, I guess really the body here, be satisfied with a bill that took the testing out of it, basically giving the statement that we will, you know, kind of to the point of what he just, of what he passed out with to Chief Justice Carbonelli, that we're at least giving the instruction to the kids, but not requiring it as a piece of their to graduate, make a test.
I'd like to, just a thought, I wrestle with this, you know, as a teacher. I don't want somebody from Juno telling me what I have to do in the classroom. I really have a hard time with imposing a curriculum from here to there. I do. But at the same time, I wrestle with it seems to me what this bill does is empower people in the communities if to be able to confront the school board. If people in the community are really concerned about this issue, they can confront their school board, who they vote for. There is accountability there to at least have a conversation about how important or how unimportant this is for their district. The only thing I think this mandates is that the school district have a meaningful conversation. And it's not a conversation. It would have to happen every year, but it's one that could happen once every until somebody else brings it up again. So I'm really torn myself because I don't want to mandate what schools will do. But at the same time, I do agree with Chief Justice Carbonetti that you know, the nation might be in balance here in terms of, and we do have a lot of people in this state and in other states that that are here illegally. They have no clue what the Constitution is about. They don't even know what rules we're playing by. And so they're here, and that's why 25% of our federal prisoners are illegals, because they never learn the rules by which we play. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think we're requiring a conversation. What we're requiring is a test, and you have to pass this test before you can get a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're passing something that took, I mean, out of this committee, the high school qualifying exam is a requirement to get a diploma. And that is, this is a high-stakes test. We're not defining exactly what that test is, but this is a high-stakes test. This is a test that you cannot get a diploma unless you pass this test. And it depends on which district is going to be doing that. Now, yes, they can do their curriculum, and yes, we can have a blank piece of paper that you sign your name at the top, and maybe that would satisfy this. But I think we're doing much more than stimulating a conversation. And Representative Pruitt's, if we want to pass a conceptual amendment or an amendment eliminating subsection B, you know, on page 2, lines 26 through 28, and to stimulate a conversation in districts, but I'm not sure that satisfies the sponsor. I think the sponsor wants, as he's told us, you have to pass a test on the values of the people that were in those 15 years of history before you can graduate high school. That's the intention of the sponsor. And I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm disagreeing with that as far as what we should do. I'm not trying to change his bill from what he intends it to be.
If you would,
excuse me. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would impose a requirement on school districts. And the question is what do you want to accomplish with this? I don't have a problem with the school districts coming up. It's fine that we let them come up with their own curriculum. We can certainly mandate it from the state level and dictate exactly what it is to everybody. But every school district's a little bit different. Every school district population is a little different. And you know, they should be certainly given the latitude to come up with a curriculum and a testing structure that works for them. It is not really, I don't think the intent of this bill is not to micromanage the school district, but is to say, listen, you need to teach this. Now, figure out how to teach it. That's their job. Okay? I think the intent of this is to make sure that at the end of a K through 12 education, the student that graduates, that successfully completes that education, has a basic fundamental knowledge of the philosophical underpinnings that is the United States. Mm-hmm. Years ago, we had a country on this planet called the Soviet Union. And it sought to mandate everything virtually that its people did. And eventually it fell apart. And part of the reason it fell apart is that there was nothing, there were 12 different republics that made up the Soviet Union. They were all their own different cultures. They had all their own different religions, value systems, and whatnot. The only thing that kept them together was the iron fist of communism. The thing that unites the United States of America are the principles that were espoused in the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the state constitutions. Those are the principles that our students that graduate at the end of a K through 12 curriculum need to have. Now, if this additional curriculum segment displaces an elective, so be it. It is our job that when a guy comes out of, or a student comes out of 12th grade, they are going to be basically 18 years old, they will have the responsibility to vote and the right to vote. They need to be able to understand the principles that the country was built on and be able to exercise that vote based on that philosophy.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is put forth the conceptual amendment and then obviously object so we can discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
The conceptual amendment would remove examination from the bill, and then obviously let's talk about it. Line from the title, which would be line 2 of page 1, and examination. On page 2, line 19, it would be and final examination. And then
say that again, sir.
Page 2, line 19.
19.
And
okay.
Final examination. And then line 27, and examination.
So you're offering a conceptual amendment.
Conceptual amendment to remove those portions from the bill. Someone would object so we can discuss and then
object. Objection? Okay, sure.
Okay.
Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, Representative Sissener, go ahead.
Yes, and I just wanted to speak to that amendment if I understand it correctly. And is it true that the amendment would allow the creation of a course curricula that talked about the Constitution but not have the test?
That's correct.
Yes. What it would do, Mr.
Representative Pruitt,
it would allow the chief school administrator. I'm actually just reading from line 17 here on page 2. The chief school administrator of the school district shall adopt and submit to the governing body of the school district a syllabus for curriculum and history of American constitutionalism. So it would require the districts to create their own. Or come up with their own curriculum, but without the final examination that would be required for them to get their diploma at the end.
Mr. Speaker?
Go ahead. Representative Sissener, go ahead.
Yes, and my concern would be much in the line of Representative Seaton's in that one of our priorities is really required that we increase the number of students that actually do graduate from high school, because we are in such a sorry position compared to other states. We've got to deal with that priority. This would allow the information that really helps people understand how fortunate we are to be in our democracy, but it would also allow them the incentive to and the capability to finish high school and then follow the other opportunities that our country allows.
Representative Pruitt.
With all due respect, I mean, I don't want to just give kids diplomas to give them diplomas. You know, when these kids come out and they're not exercising their right to vote, we have a 45%, I think, from the state, if not less, voting, and they're not engaged. I think that's something that we have to deal with. I disagree with the concept that we have to increase our graduation rate by not teaching kids things. We need to make sure that when our kids come out, and the idea is not to hold them back. That's why we're removing the testing aspect of this. The idea is to make sure that we've given them all the tools they need to succeed. And this is one of them. When you live in the U.S., it's one of the tools that you need to be successful and be a part of society. So if we're just looking at getting kids out, giving them diplomas, then we should not only remove this, we should remove a lot of other things. If we're looking at holding them back, and maybe we should keep the testing in there. I think this is just a good opportunity to help our kids be prepared as they step out into the real world and become a part of society.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you want to get performance from students, you have to demand that they perform. Just having them sit in class and sort of mildly pay attention to a curriculum segment doesn't really necessarily accomplish much. You have to hold them to a standard. And if we eliminate requirement for a test that is completely up to the school districts to come up with anyway, what's the point? We have to demand high standards. If we don't demand high standards, we're never going to see any improvement in the educational system of the state. And that's not only standards that we expect the students to achieve, it's the standards we expect the faculty to achieve.
Any other comment? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know where the sponsor is, and I'd be interested in finding out whether he's comfortable with this. But, you know, it's not high standards. It's some standard. We've specifically said, the sponsor specifically said, they can make it as easy as they want. But they have to pass this examination before they can get a diploma. So, you know, I would be, I guess I consider myself fairly well educated, and I can't tell you what the values of the people were when they developed the Articles of Confederation. And I can't tell you the first state constitutions. I can talk to you a lot about the Alaska Constitution, about the U.S. Constitution, but I can't tell you about the first state constitutions and how those differed and how the values of one state differed from the values of another state. And that's what we have in here. I mean, the Federalist Papers. There are, you know, it's a very good academic exercise to go through and read some of the Federalist Papers, and there's some great arguments in there, and there's arguments. And those are arguments and discussions. But to have a test on the Federalist Papers, to have a test on the first state constitutions or the values that the people had and those differing values between those first states, I'm at a loss, and I have a hard time imposing and saying that there should be a test on something that I don't understand. And like I say, I've been through a fair amount of education, and people can say that my education is lacking, and in this it may be, but I don't think that these particular things are the things that are necessarily the first states that aren't in Alaska the Articles of Confederation, a segment, a curriculum segment, when we're talking about trying to get student engagement and we're trying to do theme-based education, and now we're saying, oh, we're going back to a curriculum segment that you have that has to pass a high-stakes test on. So I appreciate the removal of the test. I think that that gets us quite a ways, because I think the segment might be able to be adopted into some theme-based education stuff as a segment if it doesn't have to have a separate test. So I appreciate that, and, you know, I will vote for the amendment, and I'm still not supportive of the bill, but I won't, at that point, be attempting to hold it in committee. But
okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to vote for this amendment, but the reason might be a little different. First of all, I am concerned about us mandating what the schools can do to a point. You know, if the schools aren't teaching these things in a school, they should be. So I think. However, to say that if they can't pass the test, they can't graduate, I think that's going too far. Mm-hmm. And if it's a good school, they are testing on what they're teaching, and so they should be somehow, all things that are being taught, somehow there's got to be questions about it as part of what they're teaching, not maybe 100 questions about a specific thing, but, you know, to cover different things like that. So I'm going to vote for it because I don't think that we should be saying that that is hooked to whether they graduate or not. So I don't want to talk to the bill itself, so I'll stop there.
Okay, we'll take a vote here in just a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
If you don't mind, I'd like to make a comment. If I had the vote, I would oppose the amendment. If you look at, respectfully, but I would like to call your attention to page 2, line 18. It kind of makes the point that the chair has already made, but the exam and the curriculum segment there are to be submitted to the governing body of the school district for approval. I think that the amendment weakens the bill. It still may do something positive, but it weakens the bill because the local school board at their meeting with parents there and whatever will be missing the opportunity to discuss, what they want their children to know. And I think it's a very important issue, and it's very difficult for me not to respond and get into the content of the bill and what I'm excited about, and I won't do that except to say one thing, that don't forget, there's a lot of 18-year-old kids out there that are going to raise their right hand and swear to abide by the Constitution of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And it's really not right for them to not have the opportunity to know what they're doing there. And so I would speak against the amendment, but I respect the committee's responsibility to do what you feel is the right thing to do, and that's mm-hmm. respectfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm still Representative Wilson.
Thank you. On the amendment, I think that there's a lot of parents out there that don't know either, and so they're going to say, "Heck with that! Our kids don't need to know that stuff. I mean, if they haven't been taught it themselves, they're not going to see any reason for it." And so I think our kids should be taught it, but the fact that there's an examination on there that is hooked to graduation is where I'm coming from.
And just for the record, I'm going to oppose the amendment because I think it takes the teeth out of the bill, but that's for the record. I've already done the math here. because I really do believe the Constitution is not made out of silly putty, and that there's a lot of people nowadays that think that we can just bend and twist it to mean what we want, and that there's I really believe there's a real leaning within our society today to just kind of think it's a flexible document that we can interpret any way we do want. We speak to the Native kids, and they understand that they have to know where they came from in order to know where they're going. And yet, at the same time, most of us don't know where we came from, and therefore we could wander on the trail to where we're going. If you're going to extrapolate, you have to extrapolate between two points. And we know where we are now. I think in order for us to extrapolate, we need to know where we've come from. So I've already done the math. But Representative Pruitt, do you remove your...
The objection.
Representative Kawasaki, do you remove your... Huh?
I remove my objection.
Okay. Okay. Secretary, please call roll.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Feige.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Cisna.
She can vote.
Yeah.
She can vote on amendment. If I could, it'd be yes.
She can vote on amendment.
She can.
She can.
Chair Dick.
No.
On amendment, she can.
Yeah.
I have five yeas, two nays.
I didn't know that.
Okay, very good. That was all for the record. Regarding the bill, Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, I will go back to moving a CS for HB 5 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, the committee substitute for HB 5 moves from committee with individual recommendation and accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for your hard work on this bill. A little uncomfortable ending to the committee work, but I hope you'll support the bill that goes through the process. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. It's always hard for all of us. Okay. Okay, let's see. Next online, well, we might have time here. Oh, brief at ease. HB 199 for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sheila Peterson, staff to the House Education Committee. Briefly, House Bill 199 doubles the monthly stipend to three school districts that are operating a statewide residential boarding school for high school students. The doubling of the stipend is good for 2 years, and that 2 years will allow a discussion to take place with all interested parties to decide if there needs to be a change on how to deliver high school education in rural Alaska. And last time we did run out of time, there were some people online that would like to testify, and those people are online again.
First, any questions from committee of Sheila? No questions. Let's see, Elizabeth Noodleman is here to answer questions. Did you want to testify first, Elizabeth? Maybe answer some questions for us right up front so we don't have to have to deal with that. Then we do have Bob Crumley. Let's see. I have no idea. Sight. Bob Crumley, Jim Smith, Jerry Covey, Eric Gephardt, and Doreen Lorenz are online to testify, but I bet you can answer questions before we ask them.
Thank you, Chair Dick. For the record, I'm Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance and Facilities for the Department of Education. And I believe the last time the bill was heard, I did present the fiscal note, and that is still before us. And with that, I would be happy to answer any further questions.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, we were told that this is only going to affect three schools. However, it says number one for Southeast Region, it'd be 820. Are we in version B?
I'm not in the right bill. B is what I have. I
yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
B? Okay, so is the 2.5 B. times, is that number 820?
That's two times.
Through the chair.
Or two times, I'm sorry, yeah.
Representative Wilson. There's two clarifications I would like to make for you. One is when the program was adopted, the statute adopted the program for those existing residential programs during 2005-2006, and there were three programs that entered into the residential program. The stipends that you are looking at are laid out for all regions. They're just not used if they don't refer to one of those three programs. So in asking how much the stipend would be, in this bill, HB 99, it would double the existing stipends in regulation. So it would bring the Southeast region from 410 to 820. However, as I just pointed out, the Southeast region is currently not participating in this program.
So Mount Edgecombe doesn't participate in this?
No, Mount Edgecombe is funded through a separate funding stream through the department.
Okay.
I think your, excuse me, Representative Wilson, I think your question was, is does 820 represent the doubled amount, or is that what we're doubling? Wasn't that your question? And the answer is 820 represents the doubled amount.
Okay.
Any other question from committee? One thing I'd like to ask, Elizabeth, because I know the question is going to come up, is that this bill only really applies then to Bethel, Galena, and Nenana. And there's other entities out there that would like to participate in this doubling. Would you speak to what that would involve financially for the state?
Chair Dick, as the statute currently reads, the program was available to a district that existed January 1st, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So there was three programs that were approved under that statute. Mm-hmm. The regulations to the statute allow the department to establish a period of open applications. So right now, the department really doesn't have a projection of when it may open applications or what that cost may be to the state.
Thank you. Any other comment from committee? Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although, you know, we do have the regulations for AC 33090 regulations, and C on page 13 says that when the department determines that establishment of additional programs are warranted, they can open those things. But our statute currently does not allow them to do anything. They could get applications, they couldn't institute any because this funding formula is only for those by statute, those districts before January 1st, 2005. Mm-hmm. So although they built into the regulations, our statute prohibits it, and just so everybody knows, I will be offering a conceptual amendment to allow them to the department to take applications for up to three additional programs in after July 1st.
Representative Wilson.
On that same page, on page 13, subsection D, it says, this section does not prevent a governing body from establishing an in-district residential education program that is not eligible for state support for the operation of the residential aspects of the program. So they can do that now, can't they?
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, they can have a residential program. They can't get funded.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They can't get funded for a residential program. They can have a residential program, but they can't get any state funding for the boarding school aspect.
Any other comment? Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, Representative Wilson.
Could you tell me which of these regions does Nenana, Galena, and Lower Kuskokwim fit in?
I think, isn't Lower Kuskokwim in the southwest?
Mm-hmm.
And the interior would be Galena and Nenana. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Lower Kuskokwim, I believe, is southwest. Galena may be in the northern remote region. I would need to confirm that. And Nenana, the interior region. So I could come back to you with how those regions are broken out for this specific statute.
Representative Feige.
Chairman, if you look on the second page of the fiscal note, you'll see the amounts that are assigned to each of those districts that correspond with the amounts mm-hmm. for those particular regions.
Okay. Nobody's doing the homework. Okay, very good. Thank you, Elizabeth. Online, let's see, Jim Smith, Superintendent Galena. Jim, you there? And if so, please identify yourself for the record. We'll get back to Jim Smith. Jerry Covey, are you there?
Yeah, sure.
Please identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
Best dealt with by the second session of this legislature. Thank you.
Any questions from committee? Thank you for your testimony, Jerry. I agree. If we don't really get proactive on having the discussion and coming up with something meaningful in a couple of years, this bill really doesn't make much sense at all. It just, in my mind, we're buying time so we can have that intelligent conversation. Thank you. Eric Gebhardt, Carl Horn, and one other in Nenana. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. The other in Nenana is Teresa Mayran. She's our school board president.
Okay, Eric, identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
This is Eric Gebhardt, superintendent of schools for the Nenana City School District. There have a short PowerPoint that just gives some basic information that I'll go through quickly. We can go to the second slide then. Are we there?
You're there. Go ahead.
Okay, and that's that basically gives the particulars as to where we are. I would say earlier this month we did actually admit another student, so we have actually 8 new students. Still, the 58 was correct, but I forgot to add the one new student. There was a parent that approached us, had a need, and we accepted that student into our program. If we want to go to the next slide, that identifies where our students come from so that the committee can see, and then our top 10 communities over the past 10 years. And then the final slide is a slide that shows where our graduates are and what they've done. And of the 93 graduates, we were able to contact 83. So I would like to speak in support of HB 199 and ask that it be passed from committee today. We're on record as requesting 3 times the amount, but I would concur with Jerry Covey and others who have said that it's important for us to look at rural education and the needs. And we, as a district, we're committed to doing this. So we are, we're going to continue to move forward. And but we would welcome certainly the study, and we would welcome, whatever the results may be from looking at rural education. Again, our students. They come for many reasons, but for the most part, they come because they feel like Nenana is a better place for them. So we're committed to doing what we do, and we just ask for the legislature's and this committee's support on this bill. And I'm subject to questions right now, but I would just like to say beforehand that the only person we're able to hear over our phone is Representative Dick. We have been creative, and we do have you up on our computer where we can hear everyone, but it's about a 3 to 5 second delay. So you'll think I'm thinking about your question, but I just really haven't heard it yet. So can we have more volume there, please? So are there any questions for me?
Eric, apologize for the technology glitch there. Representative Wilson has a question of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eric, you're already doing this, and so can you tell me what are you going to do with the rest of the with this extra money?
Okay. I would first of all not term it as extra. We make up the deficit that we currently run at with local support and foundation support, so we would use that to maintain and increase our academic program, but then we would also be able to offer hopefully some better services at the Living Center as well.
Yeah, I hope you don't say, or you weren't going to say that you were going to stop the foundation work and the local help. Are you going to be able to provide more programs, do you think, or what?
Yes, definitely.
Any further question from committee? Eric, was there anybody else there in the United that wanted to testify, or should we move on?
Teresa Mayram, school board president.
Teresa, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
Hi, my name is Teresa Mayram. I am the school board president here in Nenana, Alaska, and thank you for listening to us. I think the only thing I want to say is actually I'm going to step back and just be a local individual. And a lot of these kids are involved in our community. I mean, I have EMTs. I actually have one that's now involved in my family. We're just one big family with everybody. And I get to talk to these kids on a different aspect than most people do. A lot of them call me mom. And they're a lot happier to be here, and it's a more of an experience for them. And a lot of them have stopped smoking, drugs, and alcohol. So I hope, and actually I won't say I hope because we won't let this close, but more support would be nice.
Okay. Thank you, Teresa. Any question from committee? Okay. Oh, I'm hearing myself through the. All right, we just got the lag through your microphone there, so maybe you turn me down if you would. Doreen Lorenz, are you there? Friends of the Jesse Lee Home, are you online, Doreen? Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Doreen Lorenz, and I'm president of the Friends of Jesse Lee Home. We met last week with several of the committee members in Juneau and appreciate your all's time. We are looking at forming a leadership charter school. We call it the Balto School, at a historically significant landmark in Seward. This will be a statewide charter school for the kids coming their junior year for one semester that will take advantage of an enriched and robust curriculum with hands-on, standard-based education that takes the classroom markers, lessons to the real world to make them relevant. Like all residential charter schools in the state, our biggest obstacle is how to make it affordable for the students who are planning on attending. Frankly, it's unrealistic to expect we're going to be able to get full-ride scholarships for 200 students times three semesters every single year. And our biggest concern is that the kids are most likely to be left out are the kids who are going to need to be able to take advantage of our opportunities the most. Not the kids in Anchorage who are going to South High School and using this as kind of their study abroad for a semester. They're just going to be hopping down to Seward. But the kids in rural Alaska who, you know, are dealing with financial issues at home are not going to be able to afford the component of the residential school. This model for the three schools that are currently participating has been working. And it, as the school moves forward, it's been tested, it's working, and frankly, we would like to be able to have the opportunity to take advantage of this model. Representative Seaton is going to be making an amendment that allows it to open up to three more schools, and we would strongly support that amendment as it would allow us to take a huge difference in our funding formula and making this school sustainable. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for your testimony. Any comments, question from committee? Okay, thank you, Doreen. Bob Crumley, are you online?
Yes, I am here.
For you to identify yourself for the record and give your testimony, sir.
Yes, Bob Crumley, superintendent with Chugach School District, and I am here to testify in support of House Bill 199, and I want to start just by saying thank you for considering this bill. It's career and technical education in some of these residential programs is being squeezed out and of a lot of schools, and it's encouraging to see that its value is being discussed at this level. If we want to drop or reduce the dropout rates and increase the graduation rates, we must show that the students, or we must show the students that the learning that they're participating in is relevant to their futures. And there are a couple of small programs in the state that have been developed to do this, and they're doing very, very well, very successful at it. The Boys Excellence Program in Anchorage and the NAMITEC program up in Nome. And I'm hoping that there is a way to use this bill or something similar to find support, financial support, for these grassroots programs, which have already proven successful, that have only been funded through federal grant programs, and they're just not sustainable with grant funds, as you know. The VTE and the NACTEC programs meet a lot of the student needs that are going unmet in rural Alaskan high schools, and they're basically short immersion boarding school programs, so students don't spend an entire year or a semester in residence, but they'll come in for maybe a two-week period or a one-week period, and they'll receive education in career and technical and academic areas at the same time. In fact, we have a number of students that voluntarily give up their summers to participate in the program because it's such a motivating program for them to participate in. They focus on preparing for that high school exit exam, but they do it in a way that's very relevant and meaningful, and they enjoy it, and they're successful, a 98% graduation rate during the last 5 years. So if this bill could provide some kind of financial support for programs, grassroots programs like these that have proven successful, it would help Alaskan youth and Alaska economy in the long run. I believe this bill is very important for all students in Alaska. I'm just hoping that there's a way to consider funding for Voyage to Excellence and NACTEC in the future. The last point is, if there's a committee formed to review this bill or anything like it in the future, it would sure be nice to have representation from Voyage to Excellence and NACTEC. So I'll conclude with that. We're happy to answer questions if there are any.
Any questions from committee? Well, we'll certainly include you in the future conversation because this is a huge issue. I think the concept is just being birthed now, and it's birthed by the people that got this going from the grassroots. But I think the time is right, and I hope by the end of next session we will have some answers for all of Alaska. So thank you for your testimony. And Jim Smith, I understand you're online. I did call you earlier. Are you there, Jim?
I hope you can hear me, Mr. Chair.
We got you. Identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
This is Jim Smith, and I'm the superintendent at Galena, and I want to thank you, Chairman Dick, and the House Education Committee for giving me this little bit of time. I might ask if you have Exhibits A and A through F at hand there, please.
Stand by, Jim. Exhibit A. Oh, right here. Yeah, we have that. Sheila prepared that for us in our packet.
Thank you very much. I'll start off by addressing Exhibit A. It's some work that our community did in their goal-setting ventures that talked about the reason that we do what we do. And it notes, I would say, that we have 130 students from 53 Alaska communities. Of course, that was in 2008. And this year, the school district had 198 at the count period. We've probably come in contact with in excess to 220 students that have been with the program, and some of them have departed for various personal reasons. In Exhibit B and C, we'll give you some idea of the communities that have students in our program, and I think it probably demonstrates that we certainly are a statewide residential facility. We have 53 communities represented there, and Exhibit C has a better description of the numbers that are from the various Alaska school districts that find need for the kind of educational opportunities that we're able to provide. Exhibit D was a response to the Department of Education. They ask for a look at our graduates from last year and how they fared in perspective relating to the department's look at the graduation merit scholarship. And I think that it was a quick look at the success story that does come out of
the kind of programs that we're able to offer. Gives kids a pretty static environment to work from. They're safe and well cared for, and we recognize there certainly is some cost, because that's what we're here doing this and visiting with you folks about. Exhibit E was work that our community and school district did this year as we looked at the challenge at hand of how these costs were affecting our program operations and where we go from here. And I offer this just to make it clear that this is a community event that's at hand here. It takes a little bit of everything from all folks, including the city council and all of our citizens, our school board especially. When we make these decisions and come to you with requests, please know that there's certainly not some passing interest from the superintendent, but the community is looking to you to help them along with this project and the good work they do. Exhibit F, earlier in the session we were asked, Nanana and Galena both, to look at what the costs were and where we were at as far as how the current funding from the state addressed our issues. And our cost problems or challenges, of course, are like everyone's in all school operations, but they're unique in a residential facility because we need to feed these children three meals a day, 7 days a week, for 9 months, and we need to care for them. In the case of Galena, we have 18 full-time staff members that work in the residential hall. Two of them are counselors. I'd be glad to share with you staffing plans and budgets for both the residential program and the food services program should you request that. But it did come to a point where we were able to look that Galena and Nanana were pretty much in the same boat. The state money was funding about a third of our operations, and that's, as Superintendent Giphart noted, how we come to you with the number of needing three times what we're getting right now. I guess that I would wrap up and thank you for the excellent work you do and the consideration you give to us. We are in Galena in the interior region, not too far north. If there was the vehicle to move us to the far north, we probably would be glad to do that, but we are in the interior region for funding purposes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any question from committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, could you tell me what percent of your total budget are your utilities and insurance?
I'm like looking at the city school and the Gila school together. We are looking at utilities that run us around $1 million a year. And the insurance, the property insurance, that is right at $260,000 a year. And if you looked at our budget operations in Galena, we're close to $10 million. And so that's about 13%, I would say.
Okay, tell me this. If we, instead of just doubling what you're doing, if we paid your utilities and your insurance, what would that do?
Well, these food services and residential costs run us around $3 million. And so you would be giving us about what we're getting currently from the funding, the state funding that's available. For our 198, we're approved for 175 students right now. That's a state board process. And as we grew, that was where we last got endorsement from them, was to have up to or fund 175 students. Now, we've gotten larger than that because the need was there and the interest from students was there.
Right.
But that 170 brings us right at about $1 million, and like I say, that's about a third of our cost in our residents and food services.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Jim. I guess what I'm saying is if the state started, you know, I guess I'm a little, I'm not saying that you don't need more money. I don't mean that at all. But what I'm saying is you're doing a wonderful thing, and how can we help but help the rest of the state so that maybe more people could start doing these things? You know, it. You know, I hate to just throw money at something. When if we could figure out something else that maybe everybody could be helped to a point where it would be better. You would still get what you're getting, plus I mean, you're doing a good job, and we're anyway, I think you understand where I'm coming from. I want to give you more money so that you can continue doing a good job, but I want to just don't say, okay, we're just going to double what we're giving you, you know. So I'm just trying to think how we can rationally do this and still make it better for every school rather than just three. So,
okay, Jim, we do need to gavel out here. We're 3 minutes after the hour. Everybody's folding their papers and thumbing their desk. So, Jim, if you'd be willing to get online again for public testimony will remain open. Look forward to Representative Seaton's amendment next time this bill is heard, which will be early next week. And we will, let's see, next meeting will be Friday, April 1, 8 a.m. here in the same room. We're going to deal with HB 38, University Institutes of Law and Medicine, and SB 1, State Board of Education, Early Development Annual Report. And the Education Committee is...